Unfortunately, I had it shipped at the absolute worst time. It got on the ocean, and then I think like 2 days later, the Suez Canal thing happened. So what was supposed to be a 30 to 45 day shipping and was going to cost $6,000 took, I think, like 5 months and cost nearly as much as the building.
Imagine waking up in a secluded fire tower Airbnb, surrounded by breathtaking views of nature as the golden rays of the morning sun gently kiss your face. The tranquility and awe-inspiring beauty of such a place can transport you to a world far away from the chaos of everyday life. This is exactly the experience that today's guest, Christy Wolf, has created. Welcome to the Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast, the show where you learn how to plan, build, and live the tiny lifestyle. I'm your host, Ethan Waldman, and this is episode 269 with Christy Wolf. In 2011, Christy embarked on a social experiment in simple and deliberate living by building her first tiny home. Little did she know that this project, which was initially intended to last a year, would become a permanent and transformative journey. Since then, Christy has continued to create remarkable handcrafted experiences, including a treehouse in Hawaii, an underground hobbit hole in Washington, and even a potato hotel in her hometown of Boise. In this conversation, we'll dive into Christy's latest and most ambitious project to date, Moon Pass Lookouts, and the inspiration behind them. We also delve into Christy's experience as an Airbnb host and her journey creating unforgettable experiences for her guests. We'll discover the secrets behind her success and learn how she continues to dominate the Airbnb market. So get ready for an engaging and enlightening conversation with Christy Wolf as we explore her extraordinary ventures and learn from her hosting expertise. I hope you stick around. I asked John and Finn Kernahan of United Tiny House Association what they love about their Precision Temp hot water heaters, and here's what they told me.
Hey, Ethan, this is John and Finn Kernahan with United Tiny House Association.
We organize Tiny House Festival.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
First and foremost.
We have a total of 3 Precision Temp on-demand hot water heaters. The thing we really like about these, and folks know this, I think they picked this up on Finn and I, if we don't like something, you'll never hear us talk about it. So the two things we noticed that we noticed and experienced immediately, they took painstaking effort to make sure that it was done right and installed. And so that was pretty cool right there. The other thing is the continuous on-demand hot water that just ran forever without any fluctuations or anything. I can't imagine an application, especially in our environment and our lifestyle of being the nomad, transportable, mobile, tiny lifestyle where one of these units aren't good to use.
Right now, Precision Temp is offering $100 off any unit plus free shipping when you use the coupon code THLP. So head over to precisiontemp.com and use the coupon code THLP at checkout for $100 off any unit. That's precisiontemp.com, coupon code THLP. Thank you so much to Precision Temp for sponsoring our show. All right, I am here with Christy Wolf. Christy built her first tiny house in 2011 as a social experiment in living simply and deliberately. What was intended to last a year ended up becoming a permanent move. From there, she has handcrafted one-of-a-kind experiences like her treehouse in Hawaii, an underground hobbit hole in Washington, a fire lookout in the Idaho Panhandle, and even a potato hotel in her hometown of Boise. In 2017, Christy and her brother Sam were able to save a 100-year-old barn and turn it into Idaho's premier wedding venue located in Nampa, Idaho. She is currently working on her first single-family builds in Salmon, Idaho, and has another one coming up in Lakeside, Oregon. Christy also launched a video course for aspiring Airbnb hosts called Superhost School, where she gives students the tools and information to host their own 5-star experience, now available for free on YouTube or TikTok. Christy Wolf, welcome back to the show.
Hey, good to see you.
Good to see you too. Thanks for being here. And we were chatting before we started rolling. Your episode, your first episode is the most downloaded episode of this podcast. So thank you.
That's so amazing. I think it's much more to say about you and your interviewing skills than my ramblings, but I appreciate it.
Maybe it's my title writing skills, because I think the title of the episode is like, how to buy an expensive land, build for cheap, and dominate Airbnb. You know, it's like,
yes,
dominate Airbnb. But actually, I think the episode really delivers on the promise of the title, which is maybe why it's been downloaded so many times.
Well, that's lovely.
Yeah. So I guess I want to catch up, because it's been, you were episode 111, I think. So people can go to thetinyhouse.net/111 if they want to catch that episode. But it's been several years since we talked. I think you had just released the potato into the world at that point.
Crazy.
So, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you're always doing so much, but maybe, and whatever you might not even, I don't remember what I do, but like, catch us up. What have you done since then?
Yeah. So I'm still just, you know, out in the middle of nowhere working on builds. Mm-hmm. So since the potato, that one went crazy. I thought, and I'm not sure what our conversation was back then, mm-hmm. but the potato was more something that I just really wanted to do. I thought, oh, I'm going to have to charge less. And this one probably won't be as popular. It's in a farm field. And then it just went bonkers. It went crazy. So mm-hmm. who would have known that there were that many people that had a love for potatoes like me? So now we have people come in from all over the world every single day. Mm-hmm. It is booked. And it's also like a roadside attraction. And we have our cow Dolly, who's now become more popular than the potato. But right now I'm in Salmon, Idaho on this mm-hmm. high mountain lake. It's really beautiful. And I'm working on that single family home that I'm nearly finished with. I'm in like the last month, and I work here for a little bit and then I head off to another project. So I have that, and I have a completed build in Lakeside, Oregon, but it's still just permitting stuff. Okay. So that one's not on the market, but it's really wonderful. It's a prefab house from Estonia.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I had it shipped at the absolute worst time. It got on the ocean, and then I think like 2 days later, the Suez Canal thing happened. So what was supposed to be a 30 to 45 day shipping and was going to cost $6,000 took, I think, like 5 months and cost nearly as much as the building. So it was a little bit of a nightmare.
Oh, no.
That one. And it's such a wonderful spot. I can't wait for people to come. But yeah, my thinking was, you know, I really want to do a prefab. It'll be so easy. You know, I'll pop in, I'll change some things, pop out. Just, you know, you can never count on anything being easy.
Yep.
So I have that. And then what's really exciting in my life right now is I bought like my dream piece of land, 55 acres in Wallace, Idaho. It's up in the panhandle, not far from my fire lookout, Crystal Peak. It's only about 30 miles as the crow flies, but uh-huh. driving wise, it's like an hour and 40 minutes. But it's this beautiful little historic town, and it's where America's largest forest fire started and kind of kicked off the birth of fire towers and the Green Army that built them. Mm. And so I am building, I tweaked the design of the traditional fire tower, and I'm building 5 of those and a fire lookout museum in Wallace. And I'm really excited about it. And I'm crowdfunding for that right now. So that's been a whole different journey.
Yeah. So really quick, before we talk about the fire towers, because I'm really excited about them. Are the single family homes, are they going to be short-term rentals, or are you building them to like put them on the market and sell them?
No. I'm going to hold on to everything I own forever.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, the ship house that I'm doing in Sam and the one that I'm at right now, mm-hmm. Somebody had built it in the 60s.
Okay.
And I haven't got the complete story, but it's shaped like a ship. And I call it the shipwreck house because it looks like a ship that got hit by a cannonball. It was in really rough shape. So it had been abandoned for decades. And really, the inside was preserved pretty well, but everything outside, there's lots of large decks, were just, I mean, you couldn't walk around, you were going to fall through. Everybody in the neighborhood has come by and has been like, I cannot believe you bought that. So I've been repairing it, and it's a it's been really fun to do a family home. I don't have any kids, but I have 15 nieces and 2 nephews. And so I've been able to, there's like this huge treasure hunt that will involve the parents and probably take more than one day to figure out that I have throughout the house. So like those sort of things have been really fun and different than my typical, you know, I'm usually designing for a couple to come stay.
Okay. Well, in our last conversation, one of the things that you shared was kind of your problem solving mindset, which is that everything is figure outable. And it sounds like is this ship project like testing the limits of your figure outability?
No, it's been okay. Actually, crowdfunding, the computer stuff is harder for me than the actual physical things, but it has been, this is like a lot of square footage compared to my other ones. So This is basically like doing 3 builds. So it has been super time consuming. I also bought this and started working on it right when the lumber spikes happened. So yikes, all my decks are like, you know, when plywood was $104 a piece and stuff like that. So that whole COVID and supply chains, that has been super challenging and hard to figure out things because there's not a lot in your control, you know? But it's just been a big project, not necessarily a super challenging one. But I was going to say the family, the guy who built it, he, I believe, is in his 90s. They're going to be my first guests in July. Aww. And so the grandkids that grew up here, they're like my age now. The whole family's coming and I'm going to get the whole story.
That's so fun.
Yeah.
So fire towers. We talk like they're so cool. And you have one fire tower, Crystal Peak, which is an old fire tower that you kind of rehabbed and are now Airbnb-ing. What is it about fire towers that made you be like, okay, I want to do more of these. I want to do 5 of them.
Yes, that was kind of the gateway drug, Crystal Peak. You know, I'm just really drawn to unique builds. And so I was looking up different unique buildings like schoolhouses. Lots of times those are really big. You know, I need like the 1-room schoolhouses. And so I was going down the line. I'm like, I really would like a fire lookout. Usually those are decommissioned and you have to erect them on private land. Mm-hmm. But the one I came across this article that said that there was one for sale in Idaho, which is crazy. And so this was, I'm from Idaho. I live in Idaho, and this was my first Idaho build.
Okay.
And so, but the article was quite old. It was on a blog, but I did some digging and I eventually found the realtor from this expired post, got a hold of him and was able to buy it. The listing had expired and nobody had purchased it. And so it was the same situation as the ship house, been abandoned forever, but it's kind of a wild story. I try to like find the history and learn everything I can about whatever the type of build is. And so obviously there's a lot of history with the fire towers, but I didn't know my particular one, what the deal was with that. And so somebody had said it was in a book called Fire Lookouts of the Northwest, and that would be helpful. I went and looked up that book. It was like $300 on Amazon because it's out of print. And so I decided that I would try to find the author's email address and email him. And I did. And he wrote back immediately. And he said, well, my son, Dave, actually is the one who put your tower on there. So it had come from Washington State originally. He bought it for $1 on the condition that he move it within a month. He did that. And that's where I got Crystal Peak. And he actually sold all the timber on the land to pay for the land. So he got out of it like scot-free. It was just like this fun thing. And his dad is the like expert in all things fire towers. And so through that, and so Dave has come and stayed now, and I've visited Ray lots of times. And so, yeah, just learning so much more about them. It's a really cool experience because you have the 360 degree windows, usually in solitude. So they're really cool, but they are dwindling in numbers. We just lost one here in Salmon last year in the Moose Fire. And so my hope is with my museum, and then everybody tells me I can't make a museum pay for itself or be profitable, but I think I can. We will see.
All right.
But I'm like, I do have the income from the Airbnbs that can help support the museum. And then the museum's mission will be to help support the Forest Lookout Association with doing upkeep on the old ones. And then also just wildfire education and things like that. So I don't know. I've become a little obsessed with it. And I thought I was going to do it in Fernwood where my other one was. And it just like never came to fruition. I couldn't buy a large lot. I would have had to put them on, scatter them amongst the town. And then last year I was coming through Wallace and I just stopped on like a beautiful, picturesque, like first day of winter, huge snowflakes. The town is so charming and beautiful. My other one's just, it's not really even in a town. It's just in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And so, and then I had like the best lasagna of my life. And I was just like so taken with the charm of this town that I started looking for land. And then I found a piece last October and didn't know if I could do it because, you know, from my roots of very cheap properties, which this is cheap for what I'm getting, but still out of my budget. So this was $500,000 and it's 55 acres completely surrounded by Forest Service land. So there's no neighbors and just in like the most beautiful little city. So I decided to do the crowdfunding to help with the rest of it because it's just so much bigger of an undertaking than what I would normally do is just bootstrap the whole thing with my savings.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Wow. This feels very new for you because I know like last time we talked, you were like blowing my mind with how cheap you bought everything for.
Yes.
And you're like, no, Ethan, it doesn't matter if it's in the middle of nowhere. As long as it's a unique experience, people will come.
Yes. Which I still stand by. Definitely still stand by that.
Yes. Well, so the new location, so this is raw land that you purchased. And so you're having to like clear, like put in road, clear the space, like all the utilities, all that stuff, right?
Well, there's not going to really be utilities per se. So there is like a driveway already and they used to have two manufactured homes there and that the footings for those manufactured homes is what the museum design is based off of.
Okay.
So they do already have a water cistern, huge propane tanks and a big solar setup for that area. So I'm ahead there. There's like a creek and a pond and it's just incredible.
Cool.
I had to do it.
And actually for people who are listening, I created kind of like a shortcut. You can check out the crowdfunding campaign if you're listening soon. So you can go to thetinyhouse.net/moonpass, MOONPASS, and you'll see the campaign. So essentially these aren't, you're kind of pre-selling stays in the lookouts, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So normally, so I could open up my calendar for next year when I think I could be open and start booking through Airbnb. However, as you know, as an Airbnb host, those funds are not released to you until somebody stays. So I have hundreds of thousands of dollars in future reservations on Airbnb, but don't have access to that money, which stinks.
Mm. Yeah.
And the people have already paid for it. Airbnb is holding it. Totally understand. But it makes it difficult when you're like, oh, I have this idea and I could do this thing. If I had that money, I would be able to expand or do another unit.
Yeah.
But you don't.
Yeah.
And so there's been a couple of other successful campaigns. There was one called Oculus Lodge that launched on Indiegogo a couple months ago in Washington State. And so I talked to the founder of that and decided to give it a shot. It's way more work than I ever anticipated. But basically the sell is that my guests are getting a really good discount on their stay. So when we're done with this, it'll just be normal prices. And they get first access. So my places, you have to book out pretty far in advance. So if you're wanting to stay soon, it gives the guest the ability to do that and then also just help make this a reality, which is really cool. Yeah. And one thing that I think has been interesting about it is normally I buy something and, you know, the rumor mill starts in the little town that I'm in and I start meet people slowly and, you know, figure out, you know, different resources and stuff. But by announcing this before we've got too far into the build, you know, we've in permitting and stuff like that, but it's been really wonderful because people from the community have reached out or people are saying, hey, I have I own an electrician shop in town. If you need help with that, oh, we have this, we have that. Mm-hmm. So that has been really amazing to build that network on the front end versus over the months of building.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've really loved that part of it.
That sounds great. And it's nice to get the almost get the community behind what you're doing.
Right. Yeah.
/ find an awesome caretaker or two for the property.
Yes, exactly. We're going to need them.
Yeah. So with the Crystal Peak Lookout, I kind of remember you did, was the bathroom inside of like a snowcat or something?
No, we do have a snowcat that helps take guests up in the winter because it's inaccessible via car.
Okay.
There was an old outhouse that we have there. And then there's an old woodshed that we made into a sauna. So I've borrowed from those things for this one quite heavily.
Yeah. So what are you doing for bathrooms and plumbing? Is there going to be plumbing inside of the lookouts or is it all kind of down in the bathrooms?
It's all down below. Like we do have a sink, but it doesn't have like water that you turn on. It's like one of a pump faucet. So you can clean up and things like that, but not running water.
Okay.
And then down at the bottom, there will be a unit that will have a sauna and a toilet.
Okay.
So a bathroom, but not a shower.
Yep.
So you might know about these dry flush toilets. Mm-hmm. Do you know about this? It's like works like a diaper genie.
Yeah. I've definitely heard of them and looked at them online.
Okay. So that's my plan. That's what we have proposed to the city to use.
Okay.
So those will be in those units. And then in the museum, there's actually a part that I'm going to have showers for the guests. So there'll be a part blocked off from the rest of the place and accessible for all hours that will have actual running hot water. So the showers will be there and we will have some flushing toilets in there as well.
Okay. Okay. Cool. So lots of options for toilets.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there'll just be like a little bit of solar power for charging your phones and headlamps and things like that. Yeah. That's kind of what we do at Crystal Peak.
Yeah. But no hair dryers or toaster ovens.
Nope.
How do you prevent people from trying?
We don't have outlets.
Okay. That works. Yeah.
In my other properties that I have off grid, I don't put an outlet in the bathroom. Like we have to have outlets other places. So it still could happen, but I don't put them in the bathrooms.
That's smart. Yeah. The tiny house that I Airbnb is the one that I built and I didn't know what I was doing. It's only got like 20 amp service. So like if somebody plugs in a hair dryer while like the hot water heater is on, the breakers trip.
Yeah. Well, and we try to like tell everybody in our guidebooks and everything, like this house is off grid, you know, no hair dryers, nothing that heats up like that. You won't have power. Yeah.
Well, last time we spoke, I think we talked about Superhost School that you were working on, and that was going to be like a paid course. And it looks like you shifted gears and now it's free on YouTube.
Yes. I decided to just launch it for free. It was paid for a certain amount of time, but I just, am not the guru type to hold webinars and things like that. I'm building full time, but I still wanted the information to be out there because when people, hit me up about it, trying to respond to those questions individually is quite hard. So yeah, I put everything I know basically about hosting into those videos and just ended up having them put up there for free and anybody can access them.
Nice. That's awesome. I'll definitely link to those as well in the show notes for this episode, which will be at thetinyhouse.net/269. And I'm looking for, when I was kind of prepping for our interview, I was like, oh, Superhost School is free now. I got to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to circle back to something you mentioned before. Prefab houses from Estonia?
Oh my gosh. It's such a cool house, but it's so hard. Ugh. So the company that I used is called Igloo Craft. And they're like, if you picture an Airstream that was covered in cedar shakes, you would have a pretty good mental image. And that's probably what I should have done. Their craftsmanship is great, but the getting it to America was quite hard. And then also probably, you know, if I had done this in Idaho, it would probably be different, but, and maybe it would even be different in a different county, but where I put it, there are lots of rules in Oregon. And so originally, you know, when I bought the land, I reached out to the necessary people and said, like, this is what I'm planning on doing. And at that time, like, the state was in charge of buildings like this. And they said, okay, just have the factory send us pictures, which we did.
Okay.
When it got here, that changed and the state no longer handles it. And so they're like, well, you can't have a house that it has to be a prefab house that is manufactured in the state of Oregon.
Oh, come on.
And I'm like, well, it's not. So what do I do now?
Right.
So then I went through this whole thing of after the fact permit, and then that has just, and things just keep changing and changing. So, and now where I'm at, they implemented that all Airbnbs, no matter the size, have to have a fire suppression system, which if you know anything about them, they're quite expensive. And I've tried to go, this is the figuring out part. I will figure it out, but I've tried to go down the route of like, there are these like fireball things that they use in food trucks that have like a chemical powder in them.
Okay.
So that if the food truck reaches a certain temperature, then it explodes and puts out your fire.
Okay.
Because my house is so small, putting in the sprinkler system and the likelihood that a guest trips the sprinkler system is way more likely than we have a fire in the rainforest when I don't have, well, practical rainforest, when I don't have any open flame or anything like that. So I'm still trying to find a solution that would work for that, but it's new. And so it's very narrow.
Yeah.
So the building itself, amazing. Anybody that's doing a prefab, especially outside of the country, I would definitely make sure you are allowed, you know, I mean, there's not a lot I could do. They changed jurisdictions and stuff like that, but I wouldn't do it in a, like a, I'm trying to think of a nice word, but you know, in Idaho, in rural areas,
yeah,
there aren't even building departments, something like that. Right. You would have been totally fine, but I'm like in a city, there has to be, you know, a lot of laws around that, which I'm totally fine with, but it has made it more difficult. It's a really cool building, though.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it. I just quickly looked up Igloo Craft while you were chatting, and they are incredible looking. Really cool.
Yeah, they're really, really beautiful. I ended up redoing most of the interior.
Of course you did.
To make it more cottagey. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Because it has more of a, like what I would say in America looks like, kind of like a cubicle aesthetic on the inside. So I took out all of that and customized it, but I think they're adorable. Yeah.
Yeah, no, they're super unique. And I think that that's a good description, an Airstream covered in cedar shingles, which I suppose next time you could just buy an Airstream and cover it in cedar shingles.
If I had to do it over again, that's what I would have done.
Nice. Nice. Wow. So I want to get into the weeds a little bit on Airbnb hosting. Just a couple quick questions. Okay. Hopefully people aren't like going to go to sleep during this time. I've noticed that your listings, the pricing is like very straightforward, like $200 a night or whatever per night. Do you use and or recommend pricing tools that do dynamic pricing, or do you prefer to keep things just very steady?
I would recommend it. And if I was more on top of my stuff, I would probably have it. This is just because I am like not paying attention. But yeah, I don't change the rates for weekends or holidays or things like that. I mean, I'm in really rural areas. So like, it's not like, oh, there's a festival in town and we're going to be booked. And so I don't know that there'd be a lot. Mm-hmm. Also, I haven't played around with it for a long time, but for a long time, these pricing tools would want me to price my houses way lower than what I was getting for years. Yeah, because they're looking at a house that has no amenities. Why would anybody stay here? You know, they can't, they can't factor in the experience or the character. And so they're not, or at least at that time, it wasn't basing off of like, historically, you've always got $400 a night. So you should up it or something like that. And then the other thing that I run into is when I do a price change, my listings or my bookings are so far into the future that I'm like, okay, well, what do I want the Hobbit Hole to be priced at in November of 2024? I don't know. And so then I just end up not
doing it. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a big fan of Price Labs. I've been using it for my one property, and I think it would do all the things that you just mentioned that you needing it to do. Like,
I should probably outsource that to
I was gonna say, I like, it's clear that like what interests you the most is like building and creating these super unique structures, and I feel like the only way to do it the way that you do it is to just stay focused on that and not the other stuff. So I was gonna ask, like, do you have a team, do you have an assistant, or is it just you doing all this?
I just barely hired an assistant. This is like her second week. Okay, and it's been amazing. It's been amazing. She just went and went to all the, we went on a road trip to all the different places so she could meet everybody except for Hawaii. And so, yeah, I just barely got somebody. You know, I've hired my brother to come out a couple times to the ship house, but now he's running the wedding venue, so can't. So, no, it's still mainly just little old me struggling through it, but I would like a team for sure.
Yeah.
I just, it's so hard to know who I need. I do use like people on Upwork and stuff like that all the time you know, permits or blueprints, or I work with lots of people, freelancers, I guess, I want to grow that team.
Yeah. Well, it's, I mean, you have to have people that you can reach out to for permits and for blueprints and that kind of stuff. And I'm sure that you have people that you work with now who you can kind of go back to.
Yes. Yes. But it was hitting a breaking point of, you know, I don't know how many more listings I could onboard and still continue to spend most of my time building. So yeah, which is what I want to do.
Well, there's all the customer service that comes with just like running a listing when somebody texts you and says like, hey, the lock is jammed. How do I get in? Like, does that go to you or does that go to like your local caretaker?
And then you're like, just try again. Okay, you got it. Awesome.
Yeah.
No, that does go to me. It actually will go. I do use Guesty. So they'll probably see it first. And I just get like the text alert with like the very first of the sentence. Any host will know. And so sometimes you don't know, like, is this going to be, it's like, hey, we arrived. And you're like, is that a good message or is this going to be like something? So usually on those ones, I will like look at it and see if it's something that I could answer right away. But for most of the things, Guesty can answer and they're not too urgent. But yeah, it still is coming to me.
Wow. That is, I'm like amazed, and also I'm like, Christy, you shouldn't be doing that.
I gotta do some shaking.
Come on.
Yes. I know the assistant will take over that part, but and really like my, when I get those calls with the lock, with whatever, my reaction is, how do we fix this so I don't get that call again? Right? Like, is this lock too confusing? Is it starting to stick? What's going on here? You know, and then try to eliminate that as much as possible.
Got it. And that's like, I've really like, I've gone back to your interview as I've set up my Airbnb. Like, I've created a manual and I took lots of pictures of how I want it to be for my cleaner. And like, every time somebody has a question, I add it to the manual.
Yes.
And it really helps.
Yes, I have this fantasy of making a house Bible for each of my properties. And I kind of have it in like pieces, but of just having this like master of down to like the paint colors, You know, I take pictures of when I build, of like where the wires and plumbing is running, things like that.
Yep.
Appliance manuals, all of those things, because when something does happen, this is the part that I'm like trying to make a system for.
Yep.
You know, if a water heater goes out, but I'm the one that knows, oh, we buy it from this guy on Maui that just has like an old Craigslist ad. I think his name's Ron. Let me look it up, you know, and I have to do that, then it's always going to come back to me. So I want this manual to be able to say like, oh, now I don't have to go and find that model number to get it to the maintenance person. So that would be a dream if anybody wants to. That's like one of the things that I have in their neighbor's phone numbers, because, you know, somebody's dog shows up or, you know, oh, there's a crazy windstorm. And then I am really connected to these neighborhoods that are really rural, because there's nobody, you know, the news isn't covering whatever is happening. So if they're like, oh, there's a tree down on the road, then everybody's messaging. And so just all of those little things that go into a house and, you know, if there's a scuff, then this is it. And also, lots of the things that I buy, it's like really curated. So they come from a million different places and aren't necessarily replaceable. So having pictures of the items so that somebody else would be able to say, well, okay, we can't get that because it was from an antique store, but we can find something similar.
Yeah, that's really smart. I mean, I kind of did that with my tiny house, but I didn't stay that organized about it. But so now it's like when I need to replace the anode in the hot water heater, I'm like going into my Amazon history and scrolling back.
Exactly.
And like finding the part number. And then, it would be really nice to have all that compiled. And I can imagine that once you have multiple properties, it kind of becomes a necessity.
Yes. And then the only other thing that I haven't found a good system for with running my Airbnbs is the inventory.
Mm.
So do you use what was Turnover B&B, but they switched to Turno?
I have played around with it. It feels like a little bit more than I need for my one property. And so I ended up kind of building, basically what I needed was a way for my two cleaners to be able to sign up for dates. And so I kind of rigged together my own system using this tool that I love called Notion.
Okay, I know Notion.
Which is actually what I use for my, I use Notion for my tiny house manual, so that, you know, there's just like a QR code, just a laminated page that says like, go here for the tiny house manual. And so every time I update it, that, you know, it's essentially a website that gets updated rather than having to like print out another copy of it.
Yes, I do go through that. We have like a Google Doc that is editable, but then I have the physical one in the house that does need to be changed from time to time. One thing about that is, it's not called Kinko's anymore, FedEx Office has a waterproof paper. Ooh. Have you seen this?
No, I have not seen this.
It's amazing. It looks like normal paper, but I have printed off like posters and stuff for my outdoor like trailhead at Crystal Peak. It is not faded. You know, it's wet, snowy, all that stuff.
Cool.
So even inside of your house, like in Hawaii where it's humid, the paper gets all gross, or if somebody sets their coffee on it and it's, you know, then you're like, oh, now I have this crummy thing, or you have the plastic sleeves.
Yep.
That waterproof paper is amazing.
That sounds awesome.
Or guidebooks or anything that you do have to have a sign for in your house.
Sweet.
But I use Turnover for my cleaners and I love it. I don't use their marketplace, but I love it because of paying the cleaners. So I don't know how you do that, but like before having to stay on top of paying everybody, and I would do it weekly. So this makes it so they get paid immediately after they clean, which is great. But they have tried to do a inventory part, but it's more like the caretaker would say, oh, we have 24 rolls of toilet paper left. And what I want to exist, it's the only thing that I still like have to do myself, is like a caretaker will say, hey, you know, lots of things we have on subscription through Amazon, but we have lots of unique things too. So they'll say, you know, hey, our sheets are looking rough, or we need a new, you know, whatever, the certain soap that we have.
Yeah.
And so then I'll have to go and purchase it. And I would really like something that they would just be able to scan the barcode and reorder for our house. That would be amazing. And I'm hoping, like, I've been playing around with AI a lot, and I'm hoping that soon I can create my own system of all the products that get reused that we have to replace and just let them take care of that.
Really cool. Yeah, this is a lot to think about for an expanding Airbnb empire.
Yeah.
I want to shift back to the moon pass lookouts, and I'm curious, have you figured out how you're going to build them yet?
Yes. So I have like the blueprints and stuff, and it was really fun working with the structural engineer. Mm-hmm. I obviously already have my existing tower to base it off of. And so that one has a metal frame, a steel frame, but the guy that I mentioned earlier, Dave, that took it there, he did it all with his Bronco and like a buddy. And so it's like all bolted together. It's still, they're crazy heavy. You know, I can barely pick up an end, but it's doable. And so what I told the structural engineer is that I need all of these pieces to be able to bolt together. Instead of, I don't want any welding.
Yeah.
It all has to be off site.
Yep.
Not that I couldn't get a welder out there, but it's just going to make it so much easier. So that was really fun to design. And then, you know, these ones have a clear roof. And so that structure was a little bit of a challenge. And even though my current tower is a wood box that sits on top of a wood frame, he says that that's not okay for wind and stuff. So it actually has to have steel coming. Yep. You know, my corners basically have to be steel and stuff like that. And so, you know, lots of people in those sort of professions are like super thinkers, you know?
Yeah.
And I am just a jack of all trades sort of thing. So he was having a problem with how are we going to bolt together this thing that needs to look really nice because it's a skylight. And so I was like trying to understand the problem. And then I said, well, couldn't I just have some brackets manufactured, you know, that then we could just plop the corners into or, you know, the one on top, that like kind of star looking one, I can just have that manufactured and then we can just put those in. He was like, well, I think that would work. Let me run some numbers. And it was just like too simple of a solution for his genius mind, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm just going to have, I'm hoping to put them all up at once. That will keep the costs down.
Yeah.
And have everything shipped out there and then just be there for like 2 weeks erecting them. And that's the idea. I try to design them so that it doesn't have, you know, highly skilled labor involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm super stoked about it. I can't wait to build them.
Have you thought about like making them a prefab kit that you can buy or and or plans that you can buy? Because I think that people would buy them.
I get hit up all the time for all of my places. Actually, I just had to send a message, and it probably will do no good, to somebody on Alibaba that has pictures of my hobbit hole that they're selling my hobbit hole frame. I'm like, definitely, you know, I mean, I don't know what kind of thing they think that they can make it, but for it to be buried, it's got to be pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So I do get hit up a lot, but for me, like the uniqueness of it, I don't really want them to go everywhere.
Sure.
That might sound bad, but I'm like, I have guests coming from all over the world. Not that there couldn't be an Eastern fire lookout thing, but
right.
I want this to be the fire lookout capital of the world. And, you know, I just tell people it's a custom design and this is what I do.
Nice.
And I think the other thing is I could have people do, you know, lookouts or treehouses or whatever. I could sell those, but one, it's getting away from what I want to be doing, which is creating these experiences.
Yeah.
And then I also, you know, if somebody puts one in Tennessee, but they don't care about the customer experience like I do, which is going to be really hard for anybody, then somebody might associate my brand with that one. And it's not really, we're not really connected, that sort of stuff.
That all makes sense. I retract I retract my, no, I don't retract my question.
I do feel a little stingy when people are like, hey, share with me your plans. I'm like,
well, that's,
no, yeah, I mean, like, figure it out yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, frankly, like, you have enough photos of them that if somebody really wanted to build one, they could, right, they could do it, you know?
Well, and we've had people come with tape measures to the treehouse and build a couple streets up. But fortunately, which used to like drive me crazy.
Yeah.
But fortunately, like, people will always underestimate what is important, these important things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they'll be like, well, yeah, you have all this wasted space. You should put this in that. And then it gets so far from the original plan that it doesn't look like a copy. But what I hope, you know, I do share a lot of information and stuff. And what I hope is, like, not for somebody to just copy the build, but like that they will be inspired to build their own thing.
Right.
And that's what I think is really cool, especially with like the OMG fund and stuff. Mm-hmm. All of those houses are starting to be framed in and stuff now. And it's so exciting to see because it's all original ideas, you know?
Yeah. And that,
and it's awesome.
That was something you did, something with Airbnb for that, to help select people.
Yeah. I really wanted to compete in it, but instead I was a judge, which is the second best thing. But Airbnb last year gave $10 million to 100 people. So each person got $100,000 to build something unique and all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was one of the, I think, three judges, and we were each given them in like the final round, and we each got like a certain amount of them to judge. So not all of the winners. I didn't see all of the winners applications, but a fair amount of them. And I follow them as much as I can on Instagram and try to cheer them on. Nice. So that's been really, really cool.
Can you share any details on any of your, you know, maybe one or two of your favorite projects that won?
So the ones that I judge that I think are really fun is like somebody has a bunker.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. It's in the middle of the country somewhere. Mm-hmm. I can't remember where it is. But so they had already had that and they're just wanting to remodel it. I'm like, I'm super jealous of that. I would love to have a bunker.
Mm-hmm.
This gal had a dice house. It's two dice stacked and they're kind of like, it kind of makes a porch on one of them. But everything in there, like the step, the floating staircase is like Jenga pieces and the tile in the shower is Tetris and stuff. And her little video that she submitted, like the execution was so good. And it's also really interesting to be on this side of like a competition.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've applied for any competitions, but I probably have in the past, but to know like what sticks, I was really surprised at how little effort a lot of people put in to their submission videos and stuff. And so you could really tell, like, that girl's submission video, like, blew me away. Really, really cool. She had, like, these little characters, animation, and stuff like that. That one's really cool.
Nice.
One of my other favorites, I think these people are in Colorado. I might be getting all the states messed up, but they have a big property and an existing, like, normal house Airbnb.
Mm-hmm.
But at one time, their house was like a landfill for tires or their property.
Yeah.
So out in the middle of this gorgeous forest, there's thousands of tires. And in their county, you can only recycle like four a year. So they like can't get rid of them. And so they came up with this super cool design. It's not an earth ship, but it looks like two stacked tires on top of each other built out of rubber. And that's like the perfect thing for me. Like, you're taking something that is a nuisance, that you have all this stuff, and what are you going to do with it? And making it into something that people are going to want to come and experience, you know?
That's awesome.
Super cool. And then there's a gal in Africa that's doing a salt cave house.
Ooh, wow.
And that one's really incredible too. There's a bunch. There's 100 people. So they're all really awesome.
Those are all so cool sounding. You got my brain thinking like what's unique to Vermont. I'm like thinking like something cheese, something maybe at the Cheddar House.
Yes.
Airbnb made out of cheese.
Yeah.
I'm curious, you know, you're a super skilled builder and you're like always learning some new things. So do you have any things that you learned building wise in the last couple of years that kind of surprised you or like, wow, I've been doing that the hard way and now I know it the easy, now this is the easy way?
Oh my gosh, that's such a good question. And I'm sure there's a million things. I'm trying to think. I don't know. Nothing's coming to my head, but like the thing that is interesting is I'm pretty old. So I've been building for quite a while, and to see like products getting better is really fascinating. Like I always think every time I'm doing PEX pipe, I think about that I used to solder pipe together. I'm like, this is so easy. That's a tool that I love is the crimp tools, but it looks like a wrench. So it kind of has like a head on it that's kind of at a weird angle, like a wrench, instead of like the big one that you had a, and I'm weak. I have like no upper body strength. Yeah. So I would have the big ones and then I'd have to like hit it against the wall and then move all my body to try to crimp a ring together, you know, and in these tight spots.
Yep.
So this new one just like fits into the tiniest spots and it's so easy to crimp together. That's a tool that I love. And I've been trying to do a thing. My like poor kid mentality is to be such like a, you know, get by with what you have sort of a thing. But I've been trying to, when I need a tool or want a tool, to buy the freaking tool. It's been really hard. But recently I bought a planer.
Nice.
You know, I had the handheld one, but I bought a bigger one. That's been really incredible. I need to go buy a new table saw, but it's, again, one of those hard things.
Right.
That is convincing me to do it. I'm like, I do have some expendable income. And it is my job. And every time, like even buying a new tape measure, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Yeah, you know, instead of the one that like has that bend at 3 feet, you know,
that
sort of stuff.
Cool. Yeah. I've table saw. So do you bring these big tools with you to these different job sites or do you end up like buying stuff and leaving it there?
I bring most of my stuff and then I end up losing things all across the state. I recently, I think last year, I bought a toolbox for every single place and I put all the basic things, like all of the basic bits, you know, Teflon tape, electrical tape, all those things, just the, because every time I'd be like, okay, I have 4 hours to get into the hobbit hole, do whatever I got to do and get out. And then it's not close to town. So then when I'm at Home Depot before I'm heading up there, I'm like, do I have a cult gun up there? I think I have a cult gun. Well, they're $4. I might as well buy a cult gun. And then I end up with like six up there. So now I just know exactly that I have the basics inside. And then I will bring like my impact drill and like a reciprocating saw go everywhere with me.
Right.
But then when I'm like at a build like this, I will bring all my power tools.
Got it. Awesome. Well, I could just keep chatting with you all afternoon, but I'm sure you have stuff to do. Actually, I know you have stuff to do based on this conversation. So, one last question is, you know, any YouTube channels, Instagram people, books that you've read, just anything that has really inspired you in the last couple of years or a couple of months that you
Have known this question was coming. You know, for every build, it is different because I really like to immerse myself in the topic. So for the shipwreck build, I've like listened to lots of the classics like Treasure Island and things like that. So it's not particular books that I would feel like resonate with everybody across the board. But I would say if you are doing something unique like that, even like for the lookout towers, you know, rewatching documentaries and reading things about people's lives in the towers, being a watchman, but also just from the time period when these were being built, like really affects everything. I feel like it seeps into the whole design. It definitely like seeps into like terminology in the guidebooks and things like that.
Yeah.
And I think just makes the build more enjoyable.
Nice. Well, Christy Wolf, thank you. Thank you so much again for another great interview. I have the feeling this one's going to be maybe the number two most popular.
We need to just make an annual date to catch up.
Done. June 13th, 2024.
Okay. I'm there.
All right. Thanks so much.
All right. Talk to you later.
Thank you so much to Christy Wolf for being a guest on the show today. You can find the show notes including links to all of Christie's properties, to the Moon Pass lookouts, crowdfunding campaign, and so much more over at thetinyhouse.net/269. Again, that's thetinyhouse.net/269. Thank you also to Precision Temp Hot Water Heaters for sponsoring our show today. Don't forget, they are offering $100 off any unit plus free shipping at precisiontemp.com when you use the coupon code THLP, which, if you didn't know, stands for Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast. That's precisiontemp.com, coupon code THLP. Well, that's all for the show. I'm your host, Ethan Waldman, and I'll be back next week with another episode of the Tiny House Lifestyle Podcast.